This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us as we begin hour number two of the show. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. I expect that probably a fair number of people who are listening, even if they don't particularly follow Spanish popular music, will know the name of Selena, a young woman, Mexican-American singer, who was at one time very popular, had a very promising career, and very sadly, she was murdered when she was just 23 years old and didn't get to have the career that she probably should have had. Many people referred to her as the Queen of Tejano music. This morning, in this part of the show, we will explore a little bit of the history of this kind of music and go back, because certainly before there was Selena, there were other women who were very popular singers. We will be talking in this hour about one of them, a woman who in the late 1950s was, arguably was, the best-selling female recording artist on either side of the border, that is, the border between Texas and Mexico. Her name was Chelo Silva, and she was known as the Queen of the Bolero. These are songs that are sung by women about passion and betrayal and love gone bad, and she was probably one of the biggest, the first and biggest female stars of Mexican-American music. She and another singer, a woman named Lydia Mendoza, were often referred to as the two Texas greats. And this morning, in this part of the show, we'll be talking with a scholar who has written about both of these women and talks about both of them often. She was here, in fact, earlier this spring, and we were going to have her on the program to talk about Chelo Silva. And unfortunately, there were changes in the last minute in her travel schedule, and she was not here in enough time to do Focus with us. And we said, well, could we talk some other time? And she was very nice to say, yes, we certainly can do that. And she's with us here this morning, joining us by telephone. Yolanda Bruelas Gonzalez. She's professor and head of women's studies at the University of Arizona. She teaches and researches in the areas of Chicana Native women's studies with emphasis in gender and performance. She has authored this book about Lydia Mendoza, another singer, not the one that we'll be talking about here this morning, and is very much interested in this music for a number of reasons, in part because she argues that this music has been very important to Latina feminists. So we'll talk some more about the music of Chelo Silva this morning, and we'll play some for you and all of that. And of course, if people are interested in calling in and asking questions, making comments, they can do that. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers to call. Professor Bruelas Gonzalez, hello.
Good morning, David, and good morning to all listeners.
We appreciate you giving us some of your time. I was very disappointed that we couldn't talk when you were here, but I'm really glad that we're doing it this morning.
I couldn't be happier talking about Chelo Silva to the world.
Well, this is, you know, one of the things that I like about doing this program is that it is giving me the chance to learn new things all the time. So certainly her music is new to me, but I think that Chelo Silva now has one new fan in Urbana, and she lives in my house. We were listening to some of the music last night, and my wife was very taken with Chelo Silva. So,
glad to hear that.
And I find her voice, and we'll give people the opportunity to hear her voice, very compelling. I must admit, sadly, that I don't speak Spanish, so I have no idea what she's singing about, and it doesn't matter. I still find her voice very compelling.
Yeah, there's a lot of musicality. Just the aesthetic side of it is rich. Mm-hmm. Put it that way.
And I'm sure, though, obviously, for a lot of people, for what it is she's singing about, the text of these songs, it really is extremely important. The message, the story that the songs tell, they definitely matter.
Yeah, I think so. And it also matters that as she is creating these messages, people can dance them, you know. It's a slow dance music that she specialized in, you know, very slow dance. And so it has a lot of components.
Yeah. I was very interested in how much this music reminded me of the kind of Cuban dance hall music of the same sort of the same period of the 50s that I have heard. And I guess I was expecting something a little bit different, you know, something maybe a little bit that had a little more of a conjunto feel to it.
Well, you know, the conjunto music and the which is sort of rooted in that whole ranchera trajectory is more of a rural music. It has deep rural roots, and of course it has come into the cities and is part of that. But it's a way in which the city became rural through the influx of people from the countryside. But the bolero is really an urban music. It really grew in the urban centers, and along with those cities, this became like the new music of the people who were migrating to the cities. So it's a whole different expression, a lot more of that urban city and cosmopolitan, because it has a lot of shared musical instruments with other nightclub musics around the world, you know, like Billie Holiday, Edith Piaf in France. You know, they use a lot of the same musical instruments, the piano, the cornet, the trumpet, some string instruments, percussion. So there's this sort of a transnational sound, transnational urban instrumentation. At the same time, it's very different from the Cuban bolero. You know, it sort of migrated, the Cuban bolero migrated to Mexico in the 1930s and started to evolve quite a bit. And so I think it has some common ground, but then also there are great differences, and I can talk about those in a bit.
Well, before going too much farther, I think that we should play some music for folks who are listening. So we have a few cuts to choose from, and I know that they're one of these in particular that you're the most familiar with. Perhaps the title is Judas, and you want to say a couple of things about it before we play it?
Let's hear it first.
All right, let's play that. Very good. This is Chelo Silva, Judas.
Con promesas de cariño me engañaste, yo te perdono, pero ya que así mi sueño destrozaste, no hay más que un nombre que yo te pueda dar. Eres un Judas que has vivido junto a mí, manteniendo siempre en ti tu perfidia fría calma. Besos de Judas, que en tus besos mi ilusión solo esconde la traición y el veneno de tu alma. Cuando me abrazas, jurando que me quieres, yo pienso cuántas que han creído y no te han vuelto a ver jamás, y al comprender tu falsedad, te digo no, no vuelvas a mi lado. Judas, eres un que sintiera arder tu amor en la sangre de mis venas. Judas, porque aún te quiero, lloro, y a pesar de mi sufrir, si te veo yo partir, para mí será
Chelo Silva, one of the big stars of Texas-Mexican pop music in the 1950s. And this morning, this part of the show, we were talking with Yolanda Brelas-Gonzalez. She's professor and head of women's studies at the University of Arizona, about this kind of music. And again, the people who are listening, you can call and be involved in the conversation. So tell us, what is the story that the song tells?
Well, the very title, Judas, in, which in English is Judas, is a reference to, you know, Judas who betrayed, you know, Jesus with the kiss, if we remember the story.
Mm-hmm.
And here, that's she's referring to the lover's kisses as the, you know, basically the kisses of death. She refers to those kisses as devil's work, and refers to the love that she received from that person as poisonous. And so it's a song about betrayal. You know, she says, you betrayed me with promises of affection. And so this person represents, you know, the failed love relationship. And I think what's important is several things. One is that she's singing about it, and she's sort of sending this person packing. But it has a contradictory side, because you can sense that, you know, the love still lingers, you know, as is often true when you're singing about a lost love or an unhappy love or betrayal, you know, through love. So she's saying, well, I forgive you, but I'm going to give you the name you deserve, and that's Judas. You know, you're a traitor. And so it's, I think what's important for women is that she's sort of calling out a new kind of experience, of love experience, that happened in the cities, you know, this easy come, easy go love. And she even mentions, you know, I bet you treated your other lovers this way too. So she sort of sees herself as being in a line of, you know, of disastrous love affairs. And a lot of her songs are this way. They have to do with experiences of, you know, love, obsession, transgression, anguish, abandonment, casual sex, betrayal, or of course unrequited love. And I think these are the kinds of situations that arise in the new cities, you know. I mean, you meet people on the street, you meet them in the nightclub, and it's very different from the long-standing, rooted, relationships of the countryside, where, you know, people knew the, you know, families across generations, and you knew you know the people around you. And I think in the new cities, you're sort of bouncing around and having these, you know, a whole new set of relationships. And I think when women or even men hear these songs in those contexts, it sort of gives them a sounding board, a heads up, you know, watch out, this is what can happen to you, you know. And I think so it provides a certain... it sort of maps the new love geographies of the cities, and that's part of its importance.
Pardon me for interrupting you. Go on.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to ask the question, is this these kinds of themes, you say that she sang a lot of songs like this, is this something that's very typical of the bolero, or is this something that's particularly, she just liked to sing those kind of songs?
Well, I think part of her immense contribution is that she took... that she came to specialize in the extreme scenarios. And so what she did, she took a genre of music that was very sweet, very flowery. If you listen to the boleros that are performed by some of the male trios, Trio Los Panchos, or, you know, the Aces, Los Aces, they played very sweet music, and love was very flowery, and in fact, you know, this imagery, very... full of elegant metaphors. And what she does is she pushes that all the way to the dark side, and she comes to specialize in the sort of like the transgressive sides of love. And I think she did everyone a great service, because she's sort of serving as a voice that decries the dangers, you know, but then also the independent woman, you know, the woman who has who is sexually independent and experienced, and goes about, you know, choosing, you know, who she wants to love as she sees fit. And so a lot of her song titles reflect this kind of love, you know, there's songs entitled like, you know, Street Kisses or Street Meetings, and it's all about, you know, really almost close, not quite prostitution, but indeed, you know, the fast life in the city. And so she really specializes in the dark side or the failed, you know, experiences with love. But on the other hand, part of that failure is also what I see as a women's movement, that she's able to send lovers away. And there's one very famous song called Vete, which means get out of here or leave or scram. And it's all about, you know, you really are not worthy of me, and so I don't want to see you ever again. And the door slams. And I think that's important for in terms of enacting, you know, new gender and sexual relations in music. So I think it's an important tool, and when I refer to feminism, when I talk about Chelo Silva, in fact, you know, I think that people like Chelo Silva are below the feminist radar, because feminism often, I mean, the feminism of academia has really often focused on other texts, other books, you know, and less so on song, you know, traditions and on what I call proto-feminism or something that that existed as women's voices before the term feminism even came up.
It seems to me that in the themes of these songs that I see, or it seems to invite parallels to other kinds of music, particularly I'm thinking of blues and country and Western.
Absolutely.
Music. So that's definitely there?
It is. And it has that kinship to the ranchera music, the rural music, because in the rural music, there is also, you know, unfortunate events that people sing about. But I think with Chelo, it's just so much more extreme, you know. The unfortunate events that would happen in the ranchera or in, you know, other, at least the Chicano or Mexican traditions are not as extreme, and the vocabulary is not as hard-hitting as it is with someone like Chelo Silva. I mean, she just can't find enough adjectives to describe a bad lover, you know, like in one case, she has a song where she says, you know, when I was once bitten by a rattlesnake, I recovered just fine, but your love is just really, you know, far more poisonous than a rattlesnake. So she goes to great extremes to, you know, to make things explicit. And and I think part of what she's doing also is she's sort of, in my estimation, departing from what the Mexican nation or even the United States nation are trying to set up as, you know, what I would call rosy love ideologies. You know, we all saw those Leave It to Beaver things on TV, and these kinds of shows that are trying to portray love as being heterosexual and just very much under the table. And she's sort of bringing it out for everybody to see. And in that sense, she's taking issue, I think, with middle-class, you know, establishment productions of love and sexuality, where there's not even innuendo of you know, of the actual physicality of love. So she's very out there and very explicit. And I think that is just this directness and explicitness is where she takes the bolero, and that's what she's known for. You know, she's known for that. And interestingly, one of the epithets that, you know, I know that she was called the guardian angel of women, and I think it is. You know, I had to reflect on that when people told me that. You know, yeah, we called her the guardian angel of women, and I had to think about that. And it does provide a kind of a guardian thing, you know, function. When you hear about something, it's a heads up, you know, watch out, this is what can happen to you. And so I think it's a whole popular unity that's happening here at a time when urbanization is just really taken a grip, you know, and people are sort of disoriented and not knowing how to live in the cities. I mean, that, can you imagine coming from a little rancho into the city and having to figure out what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can understand how and why women would be drawn to this music, because it would seem that for a lot of them it would speak to their real experience. They would say, yeah, I know what that's like. I've been
right
there. And that they would say, here, this woman's really singing. She's not just singing her experience, she's singing my experience.
Right, or that's an experience I don't want to have, you know. I better watch out. And so, I mean, that's, I think all of us grow up with certain kinds of admonitions about watch out for this and watch out for that. But I think the song traditions do it just a lot more powerfully, you know. And at the same time, I mean, she's not telling people, you know, don't engage in sex, but she's, in fact, performing a lot of the songs are about being a public woman. And I think that's totally being public in a whole new way, you know, in history, in Mexican history, of course. She comes out of that post-Mexican Revolution era where women were very public. They were public since time immemorial in Mexico. You know, Native women have always been at the center of public life, and the Mexican Revolution was no exception. You know, women were carried arms and fought, you know, to bring down the dictatorship after 1910. And so Chelo Silva is again in that tradition of the public woman, but and not, you know, not worried at all about domesticity. You know, there's no home life here in her songs. Period. There's no children. There's no. It's all about, you know, navigating the nightclub and the streets. Yeah. So I think that makes it very interesting, also.
What was her life like, and did her actual life profile or track the echo the kinds of, was she singing about things that she actually lived?
I think so. She was, in fact, how could I put this? She loved to party. She's, I mean, there's abundant stories about her being out and about and partying and, you know, socializing, call it socializing. But the other thing is that she became this voice early on as a teenager in, excuse me, in Brownsville, Texas, where she was born. She, as a teenager, started to sing on the radio. And so she had that very public role early on. But there are stories also about her, you know, early in life, she, in fact, she married one of the DJs who invited her to sing, and that DJ is the renowned Mexican-American studies scholar Américo Paredes. And so they married and had a son and divorced shortly after. But there is a story about Paredes actually coming into a nightclub where she was singing with a gun, and he, you know, he wanted to take her home. He felt that, you know, he was trying to enforce, you know, that middle-class patriarchal morality of, you know, women belong at home, and I'm going to take you there with a gun. And, of course, he failed, and the marriage failed. And she was determined to, you know, occupy whatever space she wanted. And but I think there's nothing that particular story says a lot about the kind of life she lived. And in fact, you know, she did succumb to alcohol. And so she lived this life. It was not just an aesthetic moment for her, you know.
Yeah. I did read in your book about Lydia Mendoza. She had a few things to say about Chelo. It was a little on the catty side, maybe, but
she
said something like, oh, well, you know, Chelo, she liked to go out and party, and she drank, and it wasn't very good for her voice. So, which I suppose is probably true.
Yeah, her voice got, you know, the song you just played had her in her younger years, and her, as her career progresses, her voice becomes deeper and deeper. And I think it is, you know, alcohol and smoke and what can I say? I mean, it's those things are well known, you know, that she would. Party hardy.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Yolanda Brelles Gonzalez. She's professor and head of women's studies at the University of Arizona. She's particularly interested in Chicana Native women's studies with emphasis in gender and performance, and also borderlands, musics, and popular culture. And not too long ago, she was here on the campus of the University of Illinois to talk about this artist that we're discussing here this morning, Chelo Silva. And we couldn't have her on here on the show, but we still wanted to do this program and perhaps introduce people to this artist and her music. And she was good enough, that is, Professor Abreles-Gonzalez was good enough to say, yeah, I will talk with you about that. I'd be happy to do that. So that's what we're doing in this part of the show, talking about Chelo Silva. She was a big star of border music, Texas-Mexican pop music in the late 1950s. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I think I'd like to play some more music. We have a few cuts. How about Jason, why don't we play cut number 5? And this in English translation, the title of this song is That's What I Am. So this once again is Chelo Silva.
Decirte lo que eres y el desprecio que siento por ti, que aunque ruede mi vida en placeres, no has de ver que te olvides de mí. No lo niego que fui toda tuya, otra más que sació tu placer, otra más que rindió tus locuras. Un amor que tú hicieras perder. Todo tiene su precio en la vida, con el tiempo ya tú lo verás. Lo que hiciste de mí no lo olvides, tú también lo tendrás que pagar. Si me ves por las noches rendida, ofreciendo a la venta mi amor, tú me hiciste tomar esta vida, tú me hiciste no más lo que soy. Tomar esta vida, tú me hiciste no más lo que soy.
That's Chelo Silva, one of the pioneers of Texas Mexican pop music, very popular here both in the border region, both in the United States, in Texas, and in Mexico. Also other places around the Spanish-speaking world. That's What I Am. I like that trumpet in there.
Yes.
I like that trumpet very much.
You know this song, if you want me to...
Yes, talk a little bit about
the
song.
I mentioned earlier that Chelo Silva performs extremes of love relations, and sometimes it's that woman who is autonomous and powerful, and other times it's a woman who's downfallen. And here, she's a streetwalker. She is walking the streets and she, you know, selling her love, and she says, this is all your fault because, you know, you really messed with me, and now I'm out on the street. So she's blaming this love of hers for now, her downfall. But what I think is significant is, you know, that in this whole era, you start to see a number of songs, many songs where a streetwalker is the voice singing, you know, a woman who has who has become a sex worker, you know, for money. But it's significant that she lives to sing about it and is blaming someone, but also describing the process by which, you know, she came into the situation, and she's the person she's talking to. She says, "Well, you were crazy. You know, you just really were no good." And you've made me pay, but also in there is this line, you too will have to pay. So it's like, okay, everyone will have their turn, accountability. But in this, you know, she's walking the streets. And in fact, you know, I think this particular motif of the streetwalker became really prevalent in this time. And what's interesting is that the Mexican government hated that, and they sought to wipe it out. They did not want to have songs about street women who are singing, you know, who are surviving somehow. And in a way, it's not a glorification, but it's certainly a bringing to light that, you know, this is a fate of many women. And so they were actually, in one generation before Chelo Silva, there was a composer named Agustin Lara, and they banned his songs because he wrote a lot of songs where he painted positive pictures of prostitutes. And so the government, you know, persecuted him, and they really tried to ban these songs from radio transmission. So I'm glad you just transmitted one of those.
I hope this doesn't get me in trouble with the FCC now.
Right. So this type of song was actually persecuted by the Mexican government. And so part of the claim I make when I write or speak about Chelo Silva is that these kind of writers were really pushing against the Mexican nation. They were like creating, this is a song movement that engages the movements of the nation, and the nation was trying to push, you know, the morality of you know, stability in love, of you know, marriage, of and passing all kinds of laws that I see as, you know, restricting bodies and people's body movements. And so, you know, marriage licensing, decency laws, inheritance laws, curfews, all kinds of laws that seek to wipe out, you know, these kinds of body movements that the nation considered immoral. And so there's a real, there's, for example, dancers who were deported by Mexico and into, you know, Arizona or California because they didn't want to have people dancing, you know, naked or people showing their bodies. So I think the body and sexuality become like a new place of where power relations are fought out, or similar to right now, you know. I mean, people are trying to change constitutions to govern people's bodies, you know, along sexual lines. So we see it happening right now, and we saw it happening then, that always the nation, the governments are trying to control people's bodies and regulate, you know, how people love. So for prostitutes to be singing songs that are bestsellers is just sort of alarming to the nation.
We have a caller to bring into the conversation. Why don't we do that? Someone okay. Who's listening in, a couple, in fact, both of them listening in Champaign. So we will start with line one right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just want to comment. I don't think the average American has an understanding of how important a bolero is to the Mexican culture. The bolero's like Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, and the Beatles all rolled into one. And the history of the bolero in Mexico is just incredible. And even today, some of the very most popular Mexican songsters are sing boleros as their main course. So it's really, really an important part.
Well, Professor Borelis Gonzalez, you want to talk some more about that?
I totally agree. And I love the image the caller gave of rolling Elvis Presley and other genres together. And, you know, today, the legacy of what she did in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s is alive and well. There are singers who credit her with their careers. For example, there's a very popular singer named Paquita La del Barrio, who in every interview she gives, she describes a moment when she was down and out, had just thrown her husband out of the house because he had been disloyal, and she said she sat in her car, she turned on the radio, and it was Chelo Silva singing, and she said it was such a huge upliftment that she decided to launch her own singing career. And so she's immensely popular today, and she's grown directly out of that Chelo Silva tradition, but of course the bolero tradition is much broader than Chelo Silva. She's one in a chorus of many bolero voices, and it keeps coming back. You know, currently there are young people singing boleros, and it seems that most singers, it's like nobody, you can't walk past the bolero. You have to engage it in one way or another. It is very, very popular.
If you, a current bolero singer is like Luis Miguel.
Right.
And you go to a concert with Luis Miguel and he starts singing the great old boleros from the 40s and 50s and 30s, the whole audience starts singing along with him, and you'll have a concert where you'll have 12,000 people all singing the words right along with the singer, and it's just, it's almost like a religious experience. It's just an incredible experience.
Yes, and that image is very important, the image of everyone singing along. These are not songs that somebody dreamed up, and then, you know, it's very unlike a lot of other kind of concerts, because these are songs that move across generations, and so what you're describing is that phenomenon by which communities actually organize and constitute and galvanize themselves through music. And music, in my estimation, is a front line of defense and self-preservation for Mexican communities, especially for the working class, and singing along and singing at home with your family and singing in the car. And yes, 20,000 people singing in the concert hall. These songs are just really cherished, and they have a healing, I think, a healing function too. They're a form of collective psychotherapy, you know.
They pass them on from one generation to the next, and they honor them in a way that we fail to honor anything in our society. I mean, it's just the bolero is so incredibly important, and they just the great-grandmother sings it to her daughter, who becomes the grandmother, who sings it to her daughter, who then sings them to her daughter. And they've just passed these songs on for 60, 70 years, and they all know all the words, and they all know all the music, and it's just incredible to listen. It's the most amazing experience to listen to a throng of Mexican people at a concert all singing
yeah.
the same bolero, all together with the person on stage singing. It's amazing how important the bolero is to their culture.
Yeah, and I agree, and also how important music is just in the Mexican culture as part of the oral tradition, how music has that galvanizing force, but all that centrality, you know, that comes from that comes from way, way back, you know, what is preserved, you know, we know. Sayings such as, you know, through songs you give color, through songs you give shade to those who inhabit the earth. There's this kind of poetry about songs, just the sacredness of song, the importance of song in the Mexican culture it isn't true in a lot of other cultures.
Well, it's been a real pleasure listening to you. I'm a former Wildcat. From the University of Arizona, so I really appreciate listening to you.
I appreciate our dialogue. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call. Let's talk with someone else. This is also someone listening in Champaign, line number two.
Hi. I'm just calling because, you know, I grew up in Texas, in Central Texas, and my mom was born and raised there, but her parents were from Mexico, and you know, I do remember listening to like Vicente Fernandez and a bunch of other people mm-hmm. along those lines, and never did I hear the name Chelo Silva. So I called my mom because I was listening. I've been listening, and the song sounded really great. And she said she had never heard of her either. And so I was wondering, maybe was she someone that would be forbidden to listen to by certain families? You know, I was just thinking maybe that's why she had never heard about her before.
I think that might be possible, but let me ask you also whether sometimes it's a matter of class, like if you're more middle class or more upper middle class, maybe you had less contact with her. So I don't know if you came like from poor people or if you came from people who were better situated. That might also make a difference, you know.
Well, my mom was, I mean, they weren't rich, but they had, you know, a farm, a ranch, little ranch in, you know, out in the country. That's where she was born and raised, and then moved to the city eventually. But I wouldn't call us rich at all.
Yeah. You know, I remember a student once in a class, I was lecturing on the corrido, you know, the corrido, the narrative mm-hmm. historical yeah. ballad, and he raised his hand. He said, if I've never heard of corridos, does that mean I'm not Mexican? And the fact is that I don't think that I don't think there's any cultural phenomenon that really touches everybody, you know. It's
right.
sort of, even if it can touch a great number of people, it doesn't necessarily.
Well, that's, I mean, because we always had music. That's why, I mean, we were always listening to a lot of those old great, singers and as we were growing up that my parents always listened to before. Mm-hmm. And so I just wondered that because this person, maybe you had talked a little bit about her background and maybe as a person, maybe to some people she appealed more to others, or in some cases maybe it was just more that she was being prohibited from being listened to because of some of the things that she talked about in her.
It wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't surprise me that she, and I know that she struggled, for example, to be allowed to sing on the mega radio station of Mexico City called La X, the big X, XEW it's called. And that radio station transmitted throughout Latin America, the United States, the Caribbean, and they didn't want to have her sing there. So I found this in the newspapers. You know, I've been going through old newspapers, and she was, Chelo Silva was holding press conferences about, well, I don't really need them. I've made this much money on this song and that much money on that song. And ultimately, so see, this connects with what you're saying, that she might well, even in her day and in her heyday, have been banned from various radio stations like the Dixie Chicks are now, you know.
Right. Well, that's because I know we used to listen to the AM station sometimes down in Texas, and they were the broadcast from Mexico as well. Mm-hmm. So I would have thought that she would have been someone we had heard. So I'm actually interested in actually getting one of her tapes or something and sending it to my mom so she can hear it just to see what she's missed out on all these years.
Just make sure there are no kids in the room. You get the kids out of the room. Not
okay,
suitable for children.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Yolanda Bareilles-Gonzalez. She's professor and head of women's studies at the University of Arizona. And we are talking about the career and the music of Chelo Silva. She was born in Texas, was a very popular singing and recording star in the 50s and 60s with people on both sides of the border. Also, people elsewhere in the Spanish-speaking world. She was particularly known for singing boleros and was sometimes, I think, called the queen of the bolero, and her recordings still are available. You might take a little trouble to seek them out, but they certainly are available. And our guest has also written another book about another singing star. Her book, Lydia Mendoza's Life in Music, is about another singer, perhaps the first real women star of Mexican-American music. The two of them, she and Chelo Silva, were known as the two Texas greats. She was here, that is, our guest was here a little earlier this year, back when school was still on in the spring, and came here to the campus and gave a talk about Chelo Silva, particularly about how Latina feminists have embraced her. And we wanted to have an opportunity to talk, and so she was good enough to say yes. She'd spent some time here with us on the telephone talking about Chelo Silva. So questions, again, are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, I think that we ought to take the opportunity to play at least one more piece of music here, and I'll just maybe pick one. How about, Jason, we play cut number 6. The title of this is It's Too Bad for You. This is Chelo Silva.
Que se esfumó con tu desdén. Vana ilusión, triste dolor, mi sueño fue. No creas, mi bien, que voy a llorar lo que perdí. Mi vida es cantar, yo no sé llorar. lo siento por ti. Lo siento por ti, porque tendrás el horrible pesar de haberme roto el corazón en mil pedazos, amargando sin piedad mi vida. Lo siento por ti, porque jamás te podrás olvidar que me traicionaste, te olvidaste de mí. Y si el mundo te castiga, mi bien, lo siento por ti. De haberme roto el corazón en mil pedazos, amargando sin piedad mi vida. Lo siento por ti, porque jamás te podrás olvidar que me traicionaste, te olvidaste de mí. Y si el mundo te castiga, mi bien, lo siento por ti. Y si el mundo te castiga, mi bien, lo siento por ti.
Chelo Silva, it's too bad for you. People are grabbing partners and slow dancing all over Central Illinois.
Well, this one is amazing because it has that quality again of the woman taking control, because on the one hand, she says, you know, you really shattered my dream of love. You destroyed, you broke my love into 1,000 pieces. She says, but I won't cry for what I lost. And there's this very interesting line in there where she says, my life is song. Mm-hmm. That's very powerful. Like, you know, I'm above this. My life is song. It's you I feel bad for. And so she goes on to say that this is the title of the song, like, you know, I feel bad for you. It's you I feel bad for, because, and why? She says, you won't be able to forget the evil you did. You won't be able to forget me. And then at the very end, she sort of amplifies the picture to say, the whole world will punish you. And so it's a really, I just feel like there's this women's empowerment that happens, even though she's been mortified, knocked down, her love shattered, you know, she's able to stand up and say, you know, well, it's you I feel bad for, because you really did some evil there. And, you know, me, I'm about song, you know. This is so I just, I don't know, I love that song.
Yeah, no, it's a great song, and I love hearing you talk about it. And again, it gets us back to, I can really understand why women would, maybe not just women who are feminists, but women who would like that message, because it's a message of a strong woman. She's been done wrong, and we know how guys are. They're always doing wrong. But that somehow it's an I will survive kind of
totally, yeah,
message.
And yet I rise, and yet I rise. And so that is, you know, for me, that's a kind of a, for me, that's a woman's movement song, and not necessarily in the, you know, mainstream feminist tradition. I mean, this was not sung at rallies, but it's, for me, women's movement happening through song. And I think it's very important. And one of the things that I've relied on for my research on Chelo Silva is I interview her fan base. I've done interviews and interviews and interviews, and one of the things that keeps coming up is similar to what the caller from Texas narrated, is that at many of her concerts, there would be a contingency of men who would heckle and boo and try to disrupt her singing. And so this is very interesting. I mean, and she would go, you know, she would have it out with them from the stage. You know, she was no wimp. And so, you know, one of the things, she'd say, well, why'd you come here and pay good money, you know, so, you know, to come and boo. So she'd have, like, these words with these hecklers who paid good money to go and heckle her. So you can see she was controversial. And and it wasn't the standard morality of the time, you know. So more power to her.
Men, they're just no good. There's no getting around it. Well, do the men in these songs ever face consequences? You know, does anything happen to them?
I'm sorry.
The men in these songs, do they ever get their comeuppance?
Well, I think they do. I mean, she's saying, you know, the whole world's going to punish you, you sucker. I mean, that's. I think it's sort of. Paints a picture of a, you know, the downfall of that lover. You know, I don't think she has to be more explicit than that.
These songs, are people still singing them? I'm sure they sing them differently, but as a form, this song form just continues to go on.
Yes, it does. It has phases where it's. A little bit dormant, and then it comes back in, you know, the bolero appears, as the first caller said, that it just has this immense power and is so beloved. So the boleros are there, and, you know, I can buy Chelo Silva at swap meets. That's always my measure of grassroots popularity is, you know, if you can buy a singer at the swap meet, you know, and that might not even be a concept in Illinois, but here in the Southwest, it's sort of like, you know, these open air markets.
Right.
And also in the neighborhoods, the barrios, the Mexican neighborhoods, you can buy her at the record shops. I even got her at Tower Records not too long ago. And so she is still around, and, you know, there is plenty of testimony to her influence. One of the great Mexican intellectuals, Monsi Weiss, when the new millennium began, you know, he was asked, Carlos Monsi Weiss was asked, who were the great figures of the 20th century? And he, one of the few women that he named was Chelo Silva, interestingly. She managed to also blur these national borders and boundaries, you know, people.